Some people will tell you to play it safe. We're here to tell you to all out blitz. Welcome to the inaugural episode of the All Out Blitz podcast. I am your host, JJ Wenner, and I am joined by my illustrious co-host, Doug Orth. Now, Doug, I am sure the people know all about you, but if you would, let the people know what you are all about.
All right, then. Well, the majority of people are going to know me as the senior writer at EdUp Today. I've been there 18 years, and in my 18 years with the website, I've developed my highly successful big boards with a methodology I call preseason matchup analysis, which is something we will expand on as the summer progresses. I've been playing fantasy football since the late 90s and made more money than I have spent on entry fees every season since I began playing for money in 2000. Started creating content roughly about 2001, if memory serves. And just this last year, I was a finalist for two FSWA awards, the Fantasy Football Writer of the Year and Fantasy Football Article of the Year. That's what I have to say. So, JJ, what do you bring to the Blitz?
Mostly a bad attitude and crippling anxiety. No, I'm just kidding. In the words of the Digital Underground, just let me introduce myself. So I've been playing fantasy football for about 20 years. I've been creating content for the past six. I focus mostly on Dynasty. I have a podcast called the Rider Dynasty Podcast right there. It's on IDP Plus with my buddies Joe Harlow and Jameson Hutchinson, and we cover all things draft and dynasty related. However, if we're talking about our strengths, I generally don't bloviate a little too much about myself, but my strength lies in my ability to learn. I'm a lifelong learner. I want all the information. I want all the data, not opinions. What I'm good at is I'm able to aggregate information from a variety of sources. So I listen, I read, and I learn. I listen to a bunch of different opinions, hopefully from people I trust, such as Doug. He has always been one of my most trusted consiglieri. Who I butchered that word. Sorry, my mom. My mom's Italian. She would murder me for that. But that's it. I take all that information, sort it in my brain, and I apply it to my leagues. And that's me in a nutshell. Help, help. I'm in a nutshell. Sorry. Austin Powers.
So, yeah, before we dive into the meat of the show, I'd like to say a few words about what I hope to do each week on the Blitz, or I should say what we hope to do each week on the Blitz. This is not going to be a show where JJ and I desperately try to increase viewership by saying ridiculous things or trying to one-up each other with hot takes. That's not what this is going to be. Everything we do here will be with the intent on helping people make sound decisions and winning their leagues. I think it is important to establish that right off the top. We will hit more often than we'll miss, and we will miss on occasion, okay? But I want everybody to understand every opinion will be the product of the same research that hasn't allowed me to have as much success as I've enjoyed in this hobby. I play to win, and I expect nothing less from anyone and everyone who watches us moving forward. And with that, JJ, I'll throw it back to you.
Yeah, we play to win, right? We want to help you win your leagues. That's why we are here. So give us your feedback, drop comments, reach out to us on Twitter. You see both of our Twitter handles. Ask us any questions that you may have. And to kick off tonight on the pod, we're going to be breaking down the draft from the perspective of landing spots. Where did all of our favorite fantasy targets land? And most importantly, is it a good fit for them? But I'll tell you what is a good fit. Our comprehensive 2024 IDP Plus Rookie Guide is here. Get the Rookie Draft Guide for a limited time for only $9.99. The latest version includes all of our post-draft information and feedback that you need to dominate your drafts. So check out the link in the show description and download your copy today. Now, Doug, we saw something happen for the first time in NFL history with six QBs going in the first 12 picks. You were on the Rod Pod last week, and we were discussing whether we thought Knicks and Penix would even crack day one, right? Because that's where the betting lines were at.
Yeah.
Now, to you, does this say anything about the current state of the NFL, or is it just a reflection of how some front offices operate?
JJ, I think it's a combination of both, although I think it reflects the desperation many teams feel when they don't feel as though they have the long-term answer position. The rookie salary scale that was put in place almost 15 years ago has made it easier for teams to take gambles at the position and move on in a few years if it doesn't work out. With that said, teams also know when they feel they have their guy after the first year, CJ Stroud, for example, their perceived window to make a run at the Super Bowl is officially open. They can imply that the $40 million or so that they might use on top of a line veteran, i.e. Kirk Cousins, and on at least one or two of the new members of his supporting cast. Basically, what I think Chicago is hoping to do with one of the guys we're going to discuss here in a second, Caleb Williams.
Yeah, well, let's just jump into Caleb Williams then. He goes to the Bears. It's funny, your best team fit. You said the Bears. What do we think about Caleb landing there?
Well, the Bears have made it very clear with their offseason addition that they will throw the ball early and often in 2024. It's hard to imagine a team setting a rookie quarterback up for success any better than Chicago did this season. DeAndre Swift, Keenan Allen, Roma Dunze, Gerald Everett, adding those guys to an offense that already had DJ Warren, Cole Kmet. Williams will be the team's unquestioned starter as soon as he signs his contract and should, at least for fantasy purpose, be considered a reasonable low end QB1 right away.
Now, it's funny. I was just on Twitter, the X machine, and somebody who I trust-ish was asked whether or not Caleb Williams is going to be a QB1. They said only if he rushes for 500 or more yards. Do you think he needs that solid of a rushing season to be a low-end QB1?
Possibly, but let's be clear. I mean, the image that stands out in people's minds about Caleb Williams was that it was basically his introduction to the league, to the college football, when he replaced Spencer Rattler and had that long run against Texas in the River rivalry. The guy is athletic enough. He could probably push for 500 yards. I don't think he's going to get there, but if we're getting the volume out of him, that I believe, I think Chicago. Yep. Let me start over again. DeAndre Swift isn't a bell cow back that's going to handle 300 carries. Okay, they don't have anybody. They're going to be lucky as a team if they run their running backs if they combine for 375 carries. This is going to be a pass first team. So we've seen it. He offers enough of a rushing floor, and then if we talk about that kind of passing volume where maybe they're throwing 38 times a game, he'll get there. He'll get to 4,000 yards. He'll probably get to 25 touchdowns. That's probably the bare minimum of what you need to be a QB1 nowadays, but it's certainly possible.
All right, 4,000 yards and 25 TDs? Is that your – all right.
I'm not projecting for another couple of months. Oh, okay. But 17-game season, if he stays healthy, I think that's entirely doable. And one of the things I said in my write-ups at FF today, you know how funny it is when we watch Bears games and they'll still invoke the name Sid Luckman? Sid Luckman last played in 1950. Chicago has never had a 4,000-yard passer. Just to give you something.
Yeah, I know Roma Dunze was – somebody asked him about the Bears' all-time receiving record. And it was like 4,000 yards. And I don't know his exact quote, but it was like, in the career?
Like, I'm getting that in 3 years. I'm getting that before the end of my contract.
man, oh man. Yeah. Listen, the Jets are the same type of team. I'm a Jets fan. Sorry, everybody out there. Right. Until Ryan Fitzpatrick had that great year with Marshall and Decker.
JJ, what does this mean? What does this mean?
The number of Super Bowls we've won?
The lasting image of the Jets right there.
Jets are terrible. All right, sir. Well, a team that is turning it around with a good GM who pretty much had a phenomenal draft this year. Yeah. The Washington Commanders took Jaden Daniels at number 2. How do you feel about that fit?
First of all, durability figures to be the biggest obstacle, certainly as long as the Commanders have questions on the offensive line and Daniels, and you've all seen the shots that he took. If you read my profiles or if you just tuned into the anti-Daniels podcast, you'd see the hits that he took that were basically unnecessary as a runner. With that said, he's probably headed to the one place that will allow him to play most like he did en route to winning the Heisman last year. With Cliff Kingsbury, it's probably going to be a shotgun spread attack that will allow him to be the dual threat that he was last year. as long as the expectation is that he may only play 10 or 12 games this year. And I think that's realistic given his frame and the way he puts his body on the line. As long as the expectation is 10 to 12 games, I think Dennis managers should be thrilled if they can get him as a QB2. When he plays, I think his upside is a mid-range QB1.
And how do you feel about his ability to mesh with the weapons that are on the team?
Oh, beautifully. I think Daniels is probably underrated as a deep thrower. He doesn't have great arm strength. He has good enough arm strength. And I say that because Terry McLaurin is a great deep threat. But the other thing is Terry McLaurin is also a very good route runner. Terry McLaurin wins at every part of the field. So I'm not really concerned about there. Both primary receivers there, Dotts, Jermaine Johann, Dotts, and McLaurin, they're going to be playing for the best quarterback that they've had in Washington this year. So, and then we may get into some of the other weapons, but I mean, you got Austin Ekeler. Daniels says he's not like the typical mobile quarterback that has trouble checking down. He showed plenty of willingness to check down at LSU, so or to at least take the gimmies, right? So, as far as year one contributions, I would expect Daniels to outperform Caleb Williams.
Interesting. All right. Well, let's move on to the third pick because Jay, quarterback. Yeah.
I will say on a per game basis because I think there's a better chance Williams stays healthy. Okay. But I think when he plays, you're going to love what you get for him.
Man, you know, I'll be honest. That does worry me, though. Yeah, like, I think about Anthony Richardson, who looked so good, but then got hurt.
As it should. Right?
So, I don't know. I'm still a little bit nervous about Jaden Daniels, only because of that injury risk. And I hope he can learn, you know, what Lamar kind of learned, is how to avoid those big hits, you know, and live for the next down.
Yep.
But, you know, that's a little curse of being young, right? When you're young, you're going to live forever. They have to get hit by a 300-pound, like, 28-year-old to understand the meaning of life.
One of the things I didn't say until I got a little bit older is youth is wasted on young. Mm. And yeah, that seems to be it for young players. Yeah.
Young everybody. All right. Well, let's go to New England. Like no good player has ever said.
Oh,
is that too?
Oh.
Sorry. I apologize to New England fans. All right. So Drake May, man who's known for never coming off of his first read, goes to a team where there is no first read. What do we think about the landing spot for Drake May, sir?
Wow. I think you read my stuff, damn it.
Of course. Well,
let me start off by saying this. My high-end comp for May was Trevor Lawrence, and my low-end comp was Drew Lock, which should tell you everything you need to know about the range of outcomes I believe are possible for him. I probably watched and studied eight of his games, loved how consistent his deep ball was, and how comfortable he was throwing into tight windows. Conversely, he is mostly a line drive thrower. His short range accuracy is spotty. I can't tell you how many times I saw him miss a guy in the flat, just for example. And it's not, those aren't as easy throws as they look, but you expect a guy taking in the top three to be able to hit those. And then I didn't see, just like you said, I didn't see a lot of evidence of his ability to be able to get to a second or third reading progression. Especially as the Patriots begin their rebuild, he's going to need to be able to find a secondary receivers on a regular basis. As far as what we're talking about in redraft, he's going to probably start the year. I'd be willing to bet he probably doesn't see his first start until late October, early November, as Jacoby Brissett hopefully gives him. And he's one of these guys. The first two guys we talked about probably don't need that ramp-up period. Drake May needs that ramp-up period. And I would be I'd honestly be happy about this Patriots fan if he sat all year. I don't think he's ready for – he talks about being – I've heard him and I've heard other people say he's Justin Herbert or he's Josh Allen. Slow your horses. Let's get him some weapons first.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. I just told you what my high-end and low-end comps of you were, and I did not see Josh Allen, and I did not see Justin Herbert. And I watched eight games of his last year in their 2022 and 2023. Even at his best with Josh Downs being his primary receiver, 2 years ago, did not see somebody that, wow, this is QB1 overall number one pick type player.
Interesting, you know. And besides weapons, the Patriots could also use some offensive line help, which makes me a little bit nervous for him. I think Brissett is going to help him a lot. I hope Brissett starts for the full year. I mean, that's a consummate professional. He's played in so many different schemes and on teams that I think that wisdom could really help Drake grow and just sort of figure it out. I'm hoping because I really do think he needs that little bit of a helping hand. Now, the surprise pick of the draft, I guess, came at 108 with Michael Penix going to the Falcons. How do you feel about that landing spot?
Well, as you all know, and about everybody else, every other red-blooded football fan out there knows, Atlanta has been thrashed in the media for this selection. And while I understand why it would cause such a reaction, it is also really not as bad as the majority of fans or media think it is, especially if the team loves his skill set, and by all the indications, they do. Before the draft, I'm going to ask you a question, JJ, here, and it's maybe more of a rhetorical question. Before the draft, how many of the same people criticizing the pick now believe the Falcons were the favorites to win the NFC South? I would say probably a third to close to a half, right? Okay. GM Terry Fontenot was right in his explanation for making the pick. Atlanta should not be picking in the top third of the draft again anytime soon. So if you're looking at Kirk Cousins being a two-year investment, then, and you're not going to pick again, if you're going to pick in the 20s for the next 2 years, then you're giving up, what, three first-rounders to come up to get the quarterback? Might as well get your guy now. I'm not saying I support the pick. I'm saying what I would have done it. But I understand the logic. Anyway, assuming the Falcons can keep their core together for multiple years, Penix's strength as a deep ball thrower should mesh beautifully with Drake London, Darnell Mooney, and Kyle Pitts. We know the last two guys are serious speed threats. For Mooney's, what, 4-3, Kyle Pitts. We know he can get deep as a tight end. Drake London has probably been underutilized as a deep threat just because he's a great contested catch receiver. And then finally, let us not forget that the one thing that people seem to be assuming is already a non-issue. Kirk Cousins tore his Achilles. There's no guarantee he's going to return to 2023 form anytime this year.
Yeah, especially early this year.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to need somebody to start off the year. I don't know. I think I agree with you. When it first happened, everybody had the oh my God face, right? Like nobody knew what was, it was a shock to a lot of people. But I can kind of understand an older owner like Arthur Blank never wanting to be in the situation that he was again last year. And I think even if he has to go a little bit early to get the quarterback, I don't think he ever wants not to have the guy on the roster.
Well, JJ, let me remind you and the folks out there, last 3 years, let's recap what has been going on the last 3 years. I believe was it Matt Ryan's last year there, 2021, and then he went to the Colts in 2022 and didn't play last year, right? Yep. People were saying Matt Ryan washed up, done. What are we doing here, right? Last 2 years, we've had what, Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heineke and what else, right? That's 3 years of bad quarterback play. Do you as an Atlanta fan, or do you as a fantasy football fan want to see Bijan, Drake, and Kyle Pitts continue to be wasted? I mean,
no.
London's already getting close to his fifth-year team option. So we got a small window here of getting these guys. And if you can get them all re-signed and whatever, then you've got a nice young core for 3, 4, 5 years after Cousins may or may not be cut. I understand what they're thinking. Again, I'm not sure I would have done it, but I understand what they're thinking.
Well, you know, I always bring everything back to the Jets because it's a Jets podcast. But, you know, with Aaron Rodgers on our team, and I'm not happy about that, but with him on the team, like my first thought is, well, what happens when he goes away? Right? Because he's an old QB. Kirk Cousins is an older QB. Like, and I don't want us to have one good year with Rodgers and then have Brees and Garrett just sitting there next year with nothing, like nobody to throw him the ball. You know, I mean, we'll talk about the QB they drafted a little bit later, but I wouldn't have been against the Jets. I mean, not taking a QB at 10, but, you know, investing a pick. I was hoping for Pratt, but we'll talk about that in a minute. All right, sir. Well, let's move on to pick 110 with J.J. McCarthy going to the Vikings, as everybody thought was going to happen.
Minnesota is probably one of the few landing spots in which McCarthy should be expected to have success. I don't say that because of a lack of pass attempts or his meager college production, but just some of the holes in his game, like inconsistent ball placement, throwing blindly and under pressure and giving up too much ground to buy time under pressure. I'll tell you what, I've been doing draft profiles for roughly 10 years now. I don't remember the number of times. I don't remember any quarterback giving up ground as often as McCarthy did when he was under pressure. It was almost Fran Tarkenton mode.
Yep. When you say giving up ground, can you just explain what that means?
So think of the line of scrimmage at the 40-yard line. You take your five-step drop. Your first receiver isn't open, so then you bail up to the left. Then you're still waiting. Then you come out, you continue to give up ground, go come out to the right, and while you're buying time for your receivers, you're also losing ground. So if you do get sacked, you're losing 20 yards instead of 5. That kind of thing.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson does that every once in a while, especially in the playoffs. It's like a 20-yard loss on a sack.
And I won't say it's fine for Jackson, but it's more understandable with Jackson than it's McCarthy. Don't get twisted though. McCarthy's a good athlete. He's not a Lamar Jackson kind of athlete. And that's where the difference is. Continuing on though, head coach Kevin O'Connell has proven to be a very good influence on quarterbacks over his relatively short time as play caller, which is obviously a good thing for McCarthy. And again, one of the reasons why I think he's going to work out here. It's hard to get much of better supporting cast than Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, and T.J. Hawkins, and I know he's hurt, but let's focus on the big picture here. So McCarthy is a good bet in my mind to succeed, even though I think he was more of a back end of the first round type of prospect.
Okay. So J.J. McCarthy, does he need to sit for a year, or can he start?
No. I think
he's going to start no matter what. But
I would prefer... I think he needs less polish than Drake May, for example. But okay. I wouldn't mind. I don't know how much benefit a rookie quarterback gets from sitting the first 4 weeks, for example. But I wouldn't mind if he sat September, and then if Sam Darnold is really not performing.
Sam Darnold-ish?
Yeah, if he's not performing well, then I can see bringing him in October. Because one of the things I don't personally care about this, but I think the fans do, is if you can see how bad the alternative is first, then you're even more hyped to get to see the rookie come in. And then you're like, okay, Sam Darnold was this. JJ, please just give us a 1-to-1 touchdown interception ratio.
Give us X plus 1. Just a little bit better. You just have to be a little bit better. And listen, it's not hard to be a little bit better than Sam Darnold.
Oh, come on.
It's not. Listen, actually, it might be, because Zach Wilson tried and failed at trying to be a little bit better. I didn't think we could go backward, and yet we did.
JJ, the show's called the All Out Blitz, and you're bringing the blitz on the quarterbacks, and I'm trying to offer protection, and you're bringing the blitz.
But listen, it's an All Out Blitz. You have to max protect, baby. All right. Last quarterback of the first round went at 112. Bo Nix, Mr. I don't throw more than 10 yards down the field, ended up going to Denver. I mean, is it going to work?
Okay. So if we're going to have six quarterbacks, and I think it can, and I'm going to get to that in a second. the history tells us that if there's going to be six quarterbacks taken this early, well, this has never happened, but I'm talking about this, like four or five quarterbacks being taken highly. Three of them might work out. One of them might be average, and two of them are probably going to stink. Something along those lines. That might be 2-2-2, but you understand what I'm saying. So I'm going to make the case for him here, but I'm going to also tell you in my explanation why I think it may not work out. Sean Payton undoubtedly saw shades of Drew Brees and Knicks, given his modest height, his ability to take care of the ball, which he was very good at, very good at taking the ball, care of the ball at Oregon, and his quick decision making. And I think that's probably what sold the way he was able to retain information in the visits that he had with Sean Payton and in the quick decision making he saw on tape at Oregon. I think those are probably the biggest selling points that Knicks had for Payton. Biggest problem with Knicks is that the Oregon offense that allowed him to flourish over the last two seasons rarely highlighted his ability to throw downfield, just as you touched on. We talked about this last week on the Rod the podcast. 312 of his 470 pass attempts last year were within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. 131 of those 312 were behind the line of scrimmage. While Knicks was technically a quick processor and got rid of the ball quickly, one could easily make a case, given that information, that the scheme was the reason. The one reason I believe this marriage could work is because Payton can run an offense and will make sure defenses respect the running game. I would not expect immediate success here because Denver lacks the kind of playmakers that could help hit the ground running. But the Broncos are probably one of the few teams most suited to maximize his strengths and minimize his weaknesses because of Payton knowing he's been through this before with a similar quarterback. And I'm not saying Drew Brees equals Bo Nix. I'm saying he's had a shorter quarterback that is a quick processor. And I think sometimes when we watch college football, and I say this a lot with running backs that come into the league and don't have a lot of catches, just because we didn't see it doesn't mean they can't do it. Bo Nix was able to throw downfield. He just wasn't asked to do it a lot. Now we get to see if that's going to manifest itself at the pro level.
I hope it does manifest that he can do it. You know, I'm an eternal, optimist, but my wife might listen to this and that's not true. I always look for the best outcomes for people, right? I cheer for all players. I cheer for all teams to succeed, even the Patriots. Like, I don't like seeing teams suffer. Like, so I hope Knicks is able to put it together. I don't really like Sean Payton. Kind of think he's a douche nozzle. I don't know if I can say that on the air, but I think he's a jerk. And it's going to be interesting to see, was he just Breeze? Was he just Breeze? Or can he actually do it without him?
Yeah, it's fair. I'll tell you what, even as we saw that Drew Breeze's career and his arm was starting to decline in those later years, Payton was sharp enough and smart enough to rely more heavily on the ground game. And still do the things that Drew Brees, even a lesser Brees, was able to do. So I think if we set our expectations for Knicks as late career Drew Brees first, and then maybe we get to see differently as he hopefully gets to maybe Payton allows him to throw downfield more often, then maybe we get to see 70% Drew Brees, which would I think Broncos would probably take 70% Drew Brees.
That would be a heck of a career to be 70% of Drew Brees. All right. Well, let's go to now we're dropping a couple rounds. So let's go to
that's what the draft is.
I know. The 15th pick of the fifth round, we have Spencer Rattler landing with Sean Payton's old team, the Saints. How do you feel about Spencer?
I don't know how much I buy this, but ESPN reported during the draft coverage that some scouts could not get out of their heads the immaturity that Rattler at 17 years old showed in that documentary. While no one will go on record and say that was why he was available in the middle of the fifth round, I think it's a ridiculous notion that a documentary shot about a hotshot quarterback while he was still in high school 6 years ago may have contributed anything close to a 2-round drop, maybe 3-round drop in his draft stock. I don't know. Rather profiles is more of a backup quarterback anyway, which that would make a 5th-round draft choice about right. But you look at some of the teams that could have he would maybe even started for, and you kind of wonder why you didn't go 2 rounds earlier. Anyway, it's like I said, he profiles as a backup quarterback, so it's probably just as well if he didn't go anywhere where he would have been. He could have been pushed to start early, like Las Vegas, for example. I think in this situation, he beats out Jake Haener in camp, but thankfully, or maybe not thankfully for Saints fans, I think they're probably tied to Derek Carr for at least 2 more years anyway. So it's probably going to end up being a non-issue.
I'd love to see him get a shot, but you know, you're absolutely right. I know I carried a lot of baggage from watching that QB1 show.
Yeah.
But then I thought, what would I have looked like at 18 if somebody was following me with a camera crew? Like, I would have been a train wreck. Like, there is so much growth that happens in those years and maturity that just naturally happens. Like, to hold that against a kid who has seemed to grow as he progressed through his college career just seems a little unfair to me. It seems very old school NFL.
And think about it like this, too. So I believe that the year that Rattler came out, I believe he was either the number one prospect in the nation or the number one quarterback in the nation. Okay, you're already dealing with that at 17, 18. You already have enough people telling you how great you are, and now Netflix wants to do a documentary on you. What do you think is going to happen? Do you think it's, oh, you know what, I go to church every Sunday, I give my girlfriend a kiss on the cheek, and I don't have any ill thoughts. I don't have any sick thoughts of any kind. Come on, let's get to know the guy what he is now. Keep in the back of your mind what you saw in the documentary, and if that shows why you're interviewing him, fine. Then drop him off your draft board. Otherwise, take him for what he is now.
There's a reason that show's not on the air anymore, and it's probably because people didn't want to, you know, they were smart. All right. Well, the last quarterback we're going to talk about, hey, went to the Jets. Woohoo! Jordan Travis at 5:36 to the Jets. What do you think about Jordan Travis? Is he the savior I've been waiting for?
Well, given the shortness of my explanation coming up, JJ, sorry. Look, hey, they showed some nice foresight to scoop him up with a late 5th-round pick. But let's be real. Aaron Rodgers probably wants to play 2 more years. Tyrod Taylor just signed a 2-year contract. You're bringing him in to be breaking case of emergency situation. However, I would take Jordan Travis over what they had last year. So, at least from that perspective, you're giving yourself a chance. Whereas last year, when Rodgers went down, I'm surprised they won that Week 1 game against the Bills, and then we got to see how ugly it got after that. So, yeah.
Oh, we sure did see how ugly it got. We sure did, Doug. Well, you know, when we're talking about landing spots, if you want to find the perfect landing spot, check out Expedia. We are thrilled to announce our new partnership with your one-stop shop for the best prices in the travel world, Expedia. With Mother's Day on the horizon, Expedia is the place to make it specials for the mom in your life. Get 10% or more off at over 100,000 hotels worldwide and 30% off when booking a flight with your accommodations. Check out the link in the show description and get your next adventure planned today. Expedia. I feel like just saying the sponsor name one last time at the end, like a little button. What do you think about that?
You know they love it, so yeah. Expedia.
Well, we're going to be trying this out and seeing what fits. So, Doug. Now, overall, this was considered a pretty poor running back class, with the first running back not being selected until the middle of the second round. Do you think GMs agreed?
I think just, I hate the term draft capital, but by just in terms of what we saw with draft capital with these guys, yeah, I think they agreed to a degree. We've already seen what we think is the evaluation of the position anyway. So, I mean, it's going to take a special prospect to get in the first round as it is, right? So, but as you watch, I probably watched at least 15 of these guys. You see enough traits. You see a lot of players that can be good backups, slow in starters, but you don't see any of those truly special guys. You don't see the guy that can juke everybody out of his shoes, has home run hitting speed, and has 50 catch upside all in one package. You see one or two of those things, but you don't see all three in this, or all three or more in the same package. So, yeah, I think just based on the fact that the earliest one, I think, was 214 with the guy we're going to talk about here real soon. I believe he was the number one running back for me, and I understand why he went first off the board, but you also, with each of these guys, you're just like, oh, please just show me this, please just show me that. And it's sometimes you just don't have a class. Sometimes you have a class that just doesn't have all those special guys.
Now, do you think it's because they weren't asked to do the different things, or that they were unable to do it, so the coaches were like, we're not going to do those things with these backs?
Yeah, that's always, there within kind of lies the rub with these running backs quite often. One of my bigger complaints about college football, and we can talk about this with tight ends next week. Tight ends don't get used in near enough in college football. But by the same token, there's an obvious advantage when you talk about some of these guys, and we'll talk about maybe a handful of them. Their obvious strength is as a receiver. You're a 190-pound back with great quickness. Get him singled up on a linebacker. Why are we running him 200 times in between the tackles when we can get him 40, 50 catches? And so I think college football does a poor job of sometimes utilizing common sense with these guys. I don't know if that answers your question, but so what you have to do sometimes is with the two or three clips that you get, okay, does he have a good hand position when he catches the ball? Does he, I don't know if our folks here know what an angle route or a Texas route is, but it's basically like a V cut out of the backfield, and you're trying to get the linebacker to go one way, and you're trying to go over the middle of the field. And those aren't hard routes to ask these guys to run. But you look, okay, did the guy I'm looking at, did he run a sharp V cut? Did he run a sharp enough Texas route there where I can see that happening at pro level? Every once in a while, you might get somebody that gets used like Alvin Kamara, who don't get trusted to run option routes, for example, and your mind is just blown up. But you're looking for flashes. You're looking for hints of, okay, I saw that once or twice with this guy. Let's see what can happen when he's coached to do that on a game-by-game basis and not once every month basis.
All right, so let's start off then with the first running back drafted. Like you said, he was at 214 by the Panthers, Jonathan Brooks. How do we like that landing spot on the Panthers?
New head coach Dave Canales must have liked what he saw on tape, because one of my comps, my low-end comp for him, was actually Rashad White, who just coached Tampa Bay. I think Brooks is White's equal in the passing game, but offers more power and contact balance. And for anybody that hasn't heard the term of contact balance, basically what that is, you get, let's say you got a guy running up the middle of the field, and a linebacker hits his side, and you can almost guess that he didn't get hit. He continues to run through contact as if, yep, thank you for coming, see you again next month type of thing, right? Brooks may end up being the only rookie back that has a real chance to be named as a week one starter, although the timing of his ACL injury, which was November of last year, and the subsequent timeline for a return to form, and we talked about that on the Rod podcast last week, You give them 12 months to heal properly, and then you give them at least another 6 months almost to trust that knee again, and sometimes another 6 months on top of that. Anyway, I believe all that casts some doubt on whether or not we're going to see a great rookie year for him. I suspect that Brooks will begin the season in the split committee with Chuba Hubbard as he continues to build trust in that knee. Some maybe, hopefully, around midseason, which, again, we're talking 12 months. We're not talking 18 months. But sometime around midseason is the first time I would be willing to take the gamble that Brooks could be ready to take over the backfield. I think he has RB2 upside if he's able to get to that point. But, again, that's not the most likely outcome in my mind.
Yeah, I'm definitely more excited about him for the subsequent years. You know, they are building down there. They have a nice young quarterback. Like, hopefully they'll continue to add weapons and build this offense and allow Jonathan Brooks, as he comes into that year two post-injury, to really break out and go full bore. What about at 302, we have Trey Benson going to the Cardinals. Did you like that spot?
Yes. Let's begin by talking about James Conner's durability issues. I think that makes his likely handcuff a potentially valuable asset in fantasy. I don't think that's breaking news, and I think Benson should win that handcuff job or the backup job this summer. Even if Conner stays healthy for an entire season for the first time in his career, and again, mind you, he has never played a full season. Arizona still needed to find his long-term replacement or protect itself against one of his injury-related absences. Few backs in this draft meet qualifications better than Benson, as far who I believe gives the offense more big play than Conner without sacrificing much power. Now, mind you, I didn't say he was a better player than Conner. His biggest obstacle as a rookie is the same problem most rookie running backs face. He's got to get better at pass protection. And I think his deficiencies in that area may ultimately be end up what ends up keeping Conner locked in as the primary back there in Arizona. Having said that, again, I think for what Arizona wants, though, if the idea of having Conner, if Conner is their idea of a perfect back for them, they weren't going to find a better handcuff or a better replacement in the draft in Trey Benson.
Yeah, and hopefully that offensive line can start skewing back to average, right? If they can just get back to average, I think Conner will have more success. I think the offense will have more success. They added a lot of other weapons with Marvin Harrison joining, right? They have a good young core. They like Kyler. Conner's not going to be there forever.
Right.
So, like, I think Trey Benson definitely has a little bit of a shot there, especially, like you said, with Conner's durability. Now, everybody seemed to think that this next running back was going to go to L.A. They just thought the other L.A. So at 319, Blake Corum went to the L.A. the L.A. Rams. Ooh. How do you like that landing spot?
I like it. I don't like it for Kyren Williams, but I also don't think I've seen some stuff on the X machine that says that trade Williams, sell. I'm not there yet either. So I think one of the things that maybe we should have touched on in the open is we want to have reasoned takes, and I think reasonable, I'll get to reasonable in a second. I said this before about Brooks, about what a team liking what they seen what I thought I saw in film. LA must have seen what I saw in film because my high end comp for Corum was actually Kyren Williams. So it's amazing how sometimes this stuff works out. The Rams would probably like to avoid having Williams average 23 plus touches again for a second straight season. And I think that's so I would expect Corum to have a meaningful role in this offense early. In a worst case scenario, for Williams, maybe Corum turns this into a split backfield, although Sean McVay tends to prefer riding one back, so I don't think that's where we're going with this. Either way, Corum should quickly emerge as one of the most valuable handcuffs in fantasy in an offense that probably wanted to run last year. So as far as for fantasy purposes here, I think he's worth considering as an RB3 and possesses low-end RB1 upside if Wentz is sidelined for any length of time.
I really liked in your profile on FF Today for him how you said he could be the 1B, right, in a gap or a zone. And now he is the 1B, right? Like, so it's a perfect fit for him. Great call. Great article. That's why you should read what Doug writes over at FF Today. Just dropped a great article about day three.
That's right. Right?
Day three. Great article. I just read it a little bit ago. So
6,000 of my finest words. Don't get scared. It's an easy read.
It is an easy. Is it really 6,000?
It's six. Yeah, it's
I don't almost think I read 16. All 6,000. All right, sir. Up next, we're going to Marshawn Lloyd with Green Bay, who was drafted in the 25th pick of the third round. How do you like him going to Green Bay?
There are some out there making the case that fantasy managers should not sweat Lloyd's landing spot because Josh Jacobs' contract is really just a deal Green Bay can get out after 1 year. While anything is possible, I can guarantee you the Packers did not release Aaron Jones and sign Jacobs with the idea that he would be a one-year stopgap. Then invest in a runner in one of the worst drafts at the position in recent memory, and then wait until the late part of the third round to find their guy. I think Lloyd's arrival suggests this year may be the beginning of the end for A.J. Dillon, but Lloyd is too much of a scat back, and unfortunately he's a 220-pound scat back. I don't like – he doesn't run with enough power for a 220-pounder, but anyway, he's too much of a scat back at the moment and not a prospect I was all that high on anyway.
All right, so then let's move on to somebody who a lot of people are excited about. Jalen Wright went to the Dolphins at 420.
Yeah, you might like what I have to say here. The first part, maybe not so much. The NFL can be a cruel business. I don't know how many of us got to benefit from Raheem Mostert last year, but he just broke multiple team records in his age 31 season. But now it kind of seems unlikely he's going to be with the team past this upcoming year, despite signing a one-year extension with the team less than a month ago. While a fourth-round pick at running back is not a huge commitment, and we're talking about right here, obviously, Miami did trade up to get him, likely with the hope that he shows enough this year to give them the option of moving on to Mostert if he shows any signs of a decline, which in his age 32 season, it's going to happen sooner or later, and he's got enough of an injury history where it probably will happen. So anyway, like I said, Mostert has enough of an injury history that it makes sense to stash right in deeper leagues. While Devon Achan could absorb some of Mostert's touches if that happened in 2024, and also it's quite possible Achan and Wright would split touches, which would make them both useful in most leagues. And let's not forget, too, Achan missed a lot of games last year, too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, when you factor in Mostert's injury history and Achan missing what I think it was 6 games. There's definitely reason to stash him and draft him in probably in the middle rounds of your redraft leagues, and I would definitely make him a target in the I don't remember what I said in the article, but probably the early mid part of the second round. If he's there for you in the rookie drafts, I'm taking him.
Yeah, especially going someplace with a head coach who knows how to scheme for speed. I mean, that's what McDaniel does, right? Like, he schemes for speed.
That's what he does.
Man, it could be explosive, sir. It could be explosive. All right. Speaking of explosive athletes. Now, that was a little bit of a joke because of his combine measurables. Bucky Irvin went to the Buccaneers at 425. What do you think about that landing spot?
I had some thoughts here. I'll just stick to my script. How about that?
No, don't do that. What are your thoughts, brother?
Irving's going to have some handcuff value if he can be out just Edmonds and Sean Tucker for the primary backup job in Tampa. But his size, 5'8", 192 pounds, will likely be a big factor in him being able to earn enough touches to be anything more than a 1080 back, even if Rashad White gets hurt. In a pie-in-the-sky best-case scenario, maybe the Buccaneers think Irving is to be their Devon Achane, but that's really a stretch given what you said, his combine measurables. And that's – I'm going to interrupt myself here, too, again. we're not going to talk a lot about, or at least I don't think we're going to talk a lot about combine measurements. 40 times are typically overrated. What's usually most important with a lot of positions is the 10-yard split, for example. But what some of these things do show, again, the 40 speed, a vertical jump and broad jump are sometimes you'll hear me refer to the triangle numbers. Those are the triangle numbers. And all of Bucky Irvin's triangle numbers were 4. So that usually tells you, that gives you an idea that maybe we're lacking explosion here. For a 192 pounder, you don't want a guy with a lacking explosion. Either way, Irving and White's strengths are too similar in my mind to expect Irving to steal too many touches. So I think if he does win the backup job, you're looking at more of a breather back and not a 1B kind of back here for Tampa Bay.
All right, well, let's go on to my hometown team. The Eagles drafted Will Shipley at the 27th pick of the 4th round. What do you think about him?
You watch
Shipley, the landing spot.
Yeah, you're right. You watch Shipley and you see, I think I made my day three write-up, I think I said dollar store Christian McCaffrey, and I think that's fair. There's a reason I said dollar store, so let's not, I don't want to field questions about you said. No, I didn't say that. I said dollar store McCaffrey. Kenneth Gainwell is entering the final year of his rookie contract, so the addition of Shipley is almost certainly an indication that Philadelphia expects him to replace Gainwell as the primary backup to Saquon Barkley in 2025. And I'm still not used to the fact that Philadelphia has Barkley. That just still blows my mind. Anyway, Gainwell has been good enough for long enough that he will probably almost certainly be the lead back in a committee with Shipley next year if Barkley gets hurt. That role, that 1B role, would have some value for managers to deeper leagues, but I don't think it's enough to consider him a good stash this season.
All right. Well, let's go to my favorite running back in the draft. I love this guy. Nice. Ray Davis went to the Bills at 428. How do we like that landing spot? I'm a little excited, but tell me if I'm right in that.
JJ, as always, you are right. This is one of my favorite
fourth. Let me write down the time you just said that.
Put the timestamp on that, would you please?
Oh, it's on. This is going to be a short.
This is one of my favorite fourth round picks. Davis will almost certainly begin the season as James Cook's primary backup, if not his committee partner. I hope for Davis's sake that the Bills understand how to use him better than they did Zach Moss. I can see Davis sharing goal line work with Josh Allen at the very least. And of course, I think we understand that Josh Allen is the primary goal line option. But I think when the Bills drafted Zach Moss, they had the right idea. I just don't think they had the right play caller. And I think now that he may have the right play caller. So I think the idea all along has been to reduce the number of hits on Josh Allen. And I think Ray Davis might end up being part of that solution. In an offense that figures to lean more heavily on the run without Stephon Diggs this year, I think he has RB3 upside with Cook healthy and high-end RB2 upside if he misses time.
Yeah, I was kind of amazed. I was looking a little bit closer at the PFF numbers from college for Ray Davis in the last year for Cook. And the similarity in not only like how they both attack the outside, like they're very similar running backs and how they were utilized in this past year, like a lot of outside runs to the left or the right. But so, and I also like Ray Davis's receiving options. Like he's a good receiver.
Yes.
But man, so is Cook. Like, I don't know. I'm a little confused because it seems like that Spider-Man meme where they're kind of pointing at each other, even though, like, you know, Ray Davis is 20 pounds bigger.
Right. Yeah. That's just it too. I think while they have similar, I don't even want to say if they have similar games, while they have similarities, we're talking about, I would put Davis in the power back category, even though he has good lateral agility, even though he can make guys miss. Cook is more lateral agility guy who can, I suppose he could run over a guy from time to time, but that's not what you want him doing, right? Okay. So, and one of the things that we saw toward the end of last year with when Joe Brady took over, calling plays on offense, whereas they were more committed to the run. And I think we're seeing this isn't a death blow to Cook's fantasy value, but I don't think for people that might have been thinking of him as maybe a, I don't know, people were thinking of him as a top 24 pick in the draft, top 36 pick in fantasy drafts. I think we're probably looking more for a fifth round type of down there.
Interesting. Well, you talked a little bit about the combine. And if anybody showed up at the combine, it was our next guy who went at 429 to the 49ers, Isaac Arendo. Is that a good fit for him?
Again, yes. The 49ers can't help themselves, I think, when it comes to taking running backs in the middle rounds, although there's really good explanation for why they chose Arendo, besides the good combine testing. Both Elijah Mitchell and Jordan Mason are in the final years of their rookie contract. Mitchell and Mason will probably make Arendo irrelevant for most of this season, but he's definitely somebody I want to be stashing in Dynasty, especially if I'm the Christian McCaffrey owner.
Well, speaking of high-priced backups, Braylon Allen went to the Jets. I am not a fan of Braylon Allen. My son kind of talked me off the edge, but is this a good landing spot?
For fantasy, immediately. For redraft, no. But I'm as torn on Allen as probably any prospect, certainly any running back prospect I've analyzed lately, and I'll get to that in a second. As anybody who loves the Jets knows, Breece Hall is firmly entrenched as the feature back in New York. So anybody that they bring in is going to be battling, in this case, Israel Abanikanda for the backup job. Now, here's the part that has me conflicted. If Allen can find the form that made him such a revelation as a freshman at Wisconsin, then we're talking about somebody who can, that the Jets could conceivably use in a 1-2 punch or a 1-2, like maybe Thunder. Yeah, I don't know. I guess Hall could be Lightning. Yeah, let's go. It'd be a weird Thunder and Lightning, but at least I could see, if you give me freshman year Braylon Allen, I would say he has a real sick shot at 8 to 10 touches per week, even with Breece Hall healthy. But we haven't seen it. We didn't see that after his freshman year. We saw a guy, a 235-pound running back, that he can run people over, but he rarely did. It was. I won't say he was shying away from contact, but he wasn't embracing it either. This is one of those guys that you want to just show me. Come on, Braylon, just turn it back to 2021. Just show me 2021. Anyway, as things stand now, I think Abanikanda is going to enter camp as the early favorite. Either way, I don't expect Hall to lose much work to either guy, and I would expect Abanikanda and Braylon Allen to share work if Breece Hall misses time.
So, yeah, I'll leave it go. Allen is one of those guys who you're just waiting for the other thing. Like, you're just waiting for him to show up. Like, he can get almost in the right position for pass blocking and then not quite do it right. Right? Like this, like you're saying, he's in position to run somebody over to use his size, and he doesn't. I'm just hoping he can put it together. Hopefully he won't be facing the same stacked boxes that he faced in Wisconsin. So that should help him a little bit more. Still a little bit nervous.
Yeah. One of the things I mentioned in the profile, he was kind of a late transition to full-time running back. I believe, if I recall, they decided to make him a full-time running back before the spring or the, maybe it was during summer camp of his freshman year. And then 3 months later, he's rushing for 1,000 yards, and Debbie owners are thinking, oh, this is my guy. Dynasty owners are thinking 2 years ahead. This is the 101 whenever he comes out. And then, so a reason I mentioned that is because I want to blame some of the things like the pass pro. Sometimes you see it and you're like, yep, that's exactly what I would expect out of a 235 pounder. And then, oh, then you see the inexperience come in on other plays, and it's So I want to blame some of that stuff on just pure inexperience of playing the position, but you'd like to believe after 2 or 3 years that some of that wouldn't be that inconsistent.
All right. Well, let's go on to the next guy then, after you broke my heart a little bit there, Doug. Audric Estime went to the Broncos at 5'12". How do you like that landing spot?
I'm up in the air about this one. He's a power back with some big playability, and I want to touch on this real quickly. He averaged 4.27 yards after contact in 2023, which was the fourth best in FBS, and he ranked third in the country with 14 rushes of 20-plus yards. So we're talking about a power back, again, with some big playability. Problem is, Javonte Williams currently occupies that role in Denver, and I know what his career hasn't progressed like many would have expected, but you want to know about a guy that can break tackles and break off long runs when he's right, which Javonte Williams. I don't think Sean Payton wants to change Jaleel McLaughlin or Samaje Perine's role in the offense either, so I see it's going to be hard for Estime to be active on game day, barring the injury. So I think it's one of those situations he only gets in and gets a chance to show himself if one of those first three guys get hurt. Otherwise, I can see. I want to believe what he is he's the plan for Javonte Williams after Javonte Williams moves on. That's what I want to believe. But as far as redraft, I don't see a lot of value here.
Well, somebody who landed in a landing spot that I love is our next guy who went to the Giants at the 31st pick of the 5th round, Tyrone Tracy Jr.
Do you like his landing spot because you hate the Giants or?
Oh no, I have nothing against the Giants. I just think he's I don't think there's a lot in front of him that would scare me.
Again, mark this one down. JJ is right again. New York's one of those few spots. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. 9:09 Eastern time. New York's one of those few spots that need an infusion of talent running back. And so it seems a little bit comical to me. The Giants drafted the one who didn't commit to the position until his 6th and final college season. And yes, he spent pretty much the first five at receiver. So you're saying, Doug, okay, why are you trying to sell me on a guy who played running back for one of his 6 college seasons? What could he possibly bring to the table, right? He has a real sick shot at overtaking Eric Gray and winning the backup job behind Devin Singletary. So he should have handcuff value in redraft right away. The reason I think he may be worth a dice roll in redraft is that because his background as a receiver could give him a leg up on Singletary on passing downs. And last but not least, if things work out the way I believe the Giants want them to, I think they are hoping that Tracy is their version of Tony Pollard.
Well, that would be a very positive outcome for him. Well, let's finish up with our last running back, picked at the 5th slot of the 6th round, went to the Chargers, Kamani Vidal. How do you like his landing spot?
Along with Ray Davis, Vidal was probably those were the two biggest surprises, the two biggest pleasant surprises for me in my studying of these other running backs. As you well know, it's no secret the new regime overhauled most of the offense this spring. LA is going to enter a camp with J.K. Dobbins, who is no sure thing to return from his Achilles. And I don't know if you've talked to our friend Jesse Morris. He continues to put it out there. Seemingly year after year. There's one guy that's come back from an Achilles, one running back that's come back from an Achilles injury, and it took him 4 years. And that's Deontay Foreman. So Dobbins is no sure thing to make the team or return to form, regardless of what he's saying right now. And he got Gus Edwards leading the backfield. That's what you got. That's what you have is you have Dobbins, who's no sure thing to make the team, and you have Gus Edwards, who seemingly tries to replace him every year and make him the backup guy, right? So how long it stays Dobbins and Edwards is probably going to depend on Vidal's ability to adapt to the bro game quickly after dominating at the University of Troy. Of the 12 backs I studied the most, Vidal graded out as number 5, if that gives you any indication. He went the 6th round, he was my fifth best prospect at running back. 5'7" and 213 pounds. He reminds me of a less explosive Maurice Jones-Drew. And some of his best rates, just like MJD's, burst, contact power, a contact balance and power, and his pass protection skills. And if you do any kind of searches, be it on the X Machine or you'll see Vidal with some of the best pass blocking that you can hope for from a college running back prospect. So that's usually the thing that holds rookie running backs, especially late round rookie running back picks, from seeing the field. So if you're telling me that he already has the willingness and the ability to do that, that's somebody I'm looking at. I don't think it's a stretch to say that Vidal could lead this backfield with some likely things. Dobbins not returning. Edwards maybe starting to show some age. If those things happen over the course of summer and early fall, again, I don't think it's a stretch to say that Vidal could lead this backfield.
Well, something that's definitely going to happen, Doug, in the summer is Mother's Day. And Mother's Day is almost upon us, friends. So don't get put in the doghouse with a boring gift. Trophy Smack has fully customizable belts and rings for the special mom in your life. Let her know she's the best. With a flashy token of your appreciation, and make all the world's best mom's coffee mug givers run and hide. We only have a few weeks until the big day, folks. Head over to trophysmack.com now and use the promo code IDPGUYS to get a free championship ring with the purchase of a custom trophy or belt. Check out the link in the show description and win Mother's Day. I'm not going to lie. I think if I got my wife a Trophy Smack belt, I might get Trophy Smacked with that belt. But
No comment.
But you should definitely. Mothers would love it. Well, Doug, so long, farewell. Auf Wiedersehen, adieu. It's time to say goodbye. Doug, where can the good people find you, and what do you have cooking?
Well, as we established on the podcast last week, we both have boring Twitter handles. So as you see on the screen, at Doug Orth on Twitter. I am putting out, I won't be putting out regular content now for FF Today until probably early June. I will be in the lab working on that content. I just won't be releasing any of it until late May, early June. I will publish before the end of this week. I will have published my rookie rankings for Superflex and for one quarterback please. So I guess you can be on the lookout for that. As far as that, and I'm sure you're going to plug this at some point. You can also tweet the show here, All Out Blitz, FF. And those are the places that you can find me.
Well, I'm at JJ Wenner on Twitter. You can catch me on the Rider Dynasty podcast this Friday with Jameson and Joe, breaking down our favorite landing spots for rookies. You can check us out at All Out Blitz FF, as Doug just said. Thank you to Doug for all of his work and support as we launch this pod. To quote Hamilton, for the first time, I'm thinking past tomorrow. So thank you, Doug. I appreciate you. Special thanks to the whole crew at IDP Plus for helping produce the pod and welcoming us in. And be sure to tune in next week on Wednesday when Doug and I break down landing spots for wide receivers and tight ends. So thank you for tuning in. And remember, when in doubt, All Out Blitz. Boat drinks, my friends. Boat drinks.